This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, May 22nd, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. Executive privilege is made up. It's neither protected nor prohibited by the Constitution, and the sweeping assertions of executive privilege made by the Trump White House are challenging even the generous executive privilege protections handed out by courts. Cato Vice President Gene Healy discusses how the Trump administration is using executive privilege and where such protections might be warranted.
It's not new for presidents to fight Congress over access to information. You have these sorts of disputes starting in the George Washington administration, where presidents sometimes dig in their heels on particular requests for information. What is new is not just the claim with regard to the Mueller report, but the announcement of a blanket policy of massive resistance to all congressional demands for information. But that's pretty much what President Trump did at the end of April when he announced that we're fighting all the subpoenas. And since then, he's blocked or threatened to block testimony from a host of current and former officials, Attorney General Bill Barr, Special Counsel Robert Mueller, Don McGahn, the former White House counsel, Stephen Miller, top presidential aide, and on and on. The argument seems to be that these are, in a all caps term that President Trump coined a while back, presidential harassment, and they're not going to put up with it. That is new, that kind of across the board claim of, well, if it's not new, it's at least Nixonian to make this sweeping claim to be able to shield testimony and documents on an across-the-board basis from congressional requests for information. It's an extreme claim, and it's not the way it's supposed to work, but it remains to be seen, how it is going to work.
Right. So, this broad executive privilege claim has sets up sort of a test on what the limits are. What does the Constitution actually say with regard to this?
Well, as the situation is in many cases, there's what the Constitution says and there's what the Supreme Court says about the Constitution. And the general, as I said, there have been, throughout American history, many fights over congressional access to information. The term executive privilege is fairly new, though. It gets coined in the Eisenhower administration, and it's not read into the Constitution by the Supreme Court really until the main Watergate tapes case, United States versus Nixon in 1974, when the special prosecutor Jaworski was seeking access to certain White House tapes related to the cover-up of the Watergate burglary. And Nixon claimed a sweeping privilege to shield all presidential communications, and he lost. The court unanimously rejected that claim, saying that in this case, the president's interest in confidentiality had to give way to the demand for evidence in a grand jury proceeding. But at the same time, it said that that interest in confidential communications had a constitutional basis, that some privilege for presidential communications, the ability to keep them private, was, quote, fundamental to the operation of government and inextricably rooted in the separation of powers. And since then, the case law on executive privilege is pretty thin. The Supreme Court hasn't directly addressed it in a case involving a congressional subpoena. So you have a handful of D.C. Circuit and District Court opinions. And what usually happens is these are when there's a dispute over executive privilege and involving a congressional demand for information, it's usually worked out in a tug of war between the branches. The courts are reluctant here to rule too quickly and to break up a fight between the branches. So you know, it's usually worked out through negotiations, and that can take quite a bit of time. As for its roots in the Constitution, there's an argument that, and I think it's a pretty good argument, that the Supreme Court may have made a mistake in the Nixon case in constitutionalizing executive privilege. Where do you find that? If there is a constitutional executive privilege, where exactly is it in the Constitution? You have to sort of look to penumbras and emanations of Article 2 of the Constitution. It's not specifically written in there. The framers did know how to draft these sorts of protections for public officials. They gave a couple of them to Congress in the speech or debate clause. You know, congressmen and women can't be prosecuted for what they say on the floor of the House or Senate. But you don't find similar protections for the president specifically in the Constitution. James Wilson, who is the framer who's, you know, probably best considered the architect of the presidency we got, he told the Pennsylvania Ratifying Convention in 1787 that, you know, the executive power is better to be trusted when it has no screen, and in the presidency that the framers had designed, that not a single privilege was annexed to his character. He's not above the laws. He's subject to them as a citizen, and in his public character, he's subject to them through impeachment. So the roots of this are a little dubious. There's the University of Virginia law professor, Sy Prakash, who is a originalist and something of a conservative himself. He says that the court's reasoning in Nixon for the constitutional basis for this privilege is fairly weak. The court basically said that this was an important privilege for the president to have. There were compelling policy reasons for it, and I think that's true. But as Prakash points out, that doesn't mean that it's constitutionally rooted. The president needs a lot of things to do his job correctly. He needs funding officers and departments. He needs an army to be commander in chief, but he's not entitled as of right to any of that in the Constitution. You know, if maybe we need a space force, the president can argue that this is necessary to defending the country and necessary for him to do his job as commander in chief, but that doesn't mean he gets to create a space force without Congress. And you could say something similar about executive privilege. The fact that this is necessary, that people need to give candid advice to the president, doesn't mean that it is written into the Constitution. In fact, Prakash says it is necessary, but the Constitution neither grants nor forbids this kind of privilege. And if we need it, Congress can outline it, can provide its contours through statute. It shouldn't be a judge-made doctrine.
And Congress has not spelled out what executive privilege looks like.
No. In fact, there is the president's latest Supreme Court appointee, Brett Kavanaugh, wrote an interesting article about 20 years ago when he was coming off of his service in the independent counsel's office under Ken Starr, where he suggested that Congress could in certain ways, define and restrict that privilege, that it could, when there are criminal trials and grand jury subpoenas, it could say that the executive privilege claims are limited to military, diplomatic, and security secrets and can't be used to protect the White House from embarrassment or exposure of wrongdoing. So Congress hasn't, but it arguably hasn't yet, but it arguably does have power to define this maybe a little more clearly than the courts have.
It seems pretty clear from the Constitution and from what you've said here today that Congress has clear oversight functions over the executive branch, and the extent to which the president may assert executive privilege sort of would be reining in that oversight function.
Yeah. And, you know, in the blanket refusal to cooperate with subpoenas from the House, there's something like 20 different, the Washington Post had a list of 20 different areas where the administration is resisting providing information. Within some of those, there may be legitimate claims of some kinds of privilege. But with this across-the-board policy of, you know, we're going to resist all the subpoenas is not the way this is supposed to work. The problem is, though, that presidents can run out the clock on by making bogus executive privilege claims. The to the extent that they've addressed it, the courts don't want to get involved. They encourage negotiation. They don't want to rule on the merits until the other branches have negotiated in good faith and reached a total impasse. So what tends to happen is if you do get a decision from the courts, it can be years after the fact. There was a dispute in George W. Bush's second term about firing U.S. attorneys and whether his former White House counsel, Harriet Myers, could testify. She ended up testifying, but it was in the Obama administration. The fast and furious executive privilege claim made in the Obama administration over the fast and furious BATF gun walking scandal, that didn't, there was no district court decision in that. It started in 2012, and there wasn't a court decision until 4 years later, and it's still, the details are still being ironed out even now. So it is, even when the claims of privilege are weak, Congress doesn't have a ready enforcement mechanism that can resolve them in a timely fashion. And, you know, with the 2020 election, what, 18 months away, this, you know, it's quite plausible that in some of these areas, the administration will be able to, in many of these areas, will be able to push any resolution back to after that election, which may be what they're trying to do.
Is there any appetite in Congress to actually go ahead and define the contours of what executive privilege actually might be?
Not that I can see. Not, you know, one thing that Congress does have in its arsenal that it may have to credibly threaten to do is to use the I word, impeachment. The third article of impeachment against Nixon in 1974 was based on disobeying congressional subpoenas and making bogus executive privilege claims. You know, the House Judiciary Committee passed an article that said Nixon didn't have lawful excuse not to produce papers that were needed in an impeachment inquiry, and he substituted his judgment for the judgment that was left to the House of Representatives in the Constitution. So in other words, his resistance to demands for evidence in an impeachment inquiry was itself grounds for impeachment. And it Congress's claim of Congress is supposed to have a legitimate legislative purpose for any information that it seeks. Its claim to have that kind of purpose is at its strongest when it's engaged in an impeachment inquiry. It's recognized to be as compelling an interest as Congress can have in that area. It may not come to that. You know, as we've discussed on this podcast before, President Trump has this tendency to tweet out crank theories of executive power, like the idea that he can pardon himself or deny birthright citizenship by executive order, and then climb down. Nothing much happens. And that could be what we're seeing here. Maybe it's just like another extreme negotiating tactic, like threatening to nuke North Korea before buddying up to Little Kim. This could be something that, you know, eventually there's a climb down from. On the other hand, if this claim to be able to lawfully resist any and all subpoenas because they're presidential harassment, if he ends up being serious about this claim, things could get pretty interesting.
Gene Healy is author of The Cult of the Presidency. He's also a vice president at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.